Françoise Gillot met Pablo Picasso in 1943 during the German occupation of France. She was 21, and she says she already felt that painting was her whole life. But she made room in her life for Picasso. Whereas she was just getting established, he was already one of the best-known artists in the world. He was also 3 times her age. Their relationship lasted more than 10 years, and they had 2 children, Claude and Paloma. Gillot wrote about that decade in her book Life with Picasso. Many things have changed in her life since she left him. She now lives in the United States with her husband Jonas Salk, but painting is still at the center of her life. A retrospective of her work recently premiered at the Picasso Museum in France, and a new book about her painting has just been published, titled An Artist's Journey. It includes reproductions of paintings from throughout her career. I spoke with Françoise Gillot from the NPR studios in New York. I asked her to elaborate on something that she wrote in her new book. She says, "As a painter, I have become more or less a loner, because when I was younger, I knew so many painters that afterwards I got indigestion."
Well, it's simple. It's straightforward enough, I think. It means that at the beginning of my career as an artist, I was able to meet, you know, the great painters of almost 2 generations before mine, and even just 1 generation before mine. And I got, you know, it was very important, very interesting. But after that, when I was more than 30 years old, I thought I had enough input to last for a lifetime, and I really didn't want to start, you know. After that, I wanted to develop on my own.
So did you basically cut yourself off from...
No, I did not, but I mean, I just started also to travel a great deal. I had a studio in London in the 60s, and then after that in the 70s, started to come to New York. And I did meet some of the artists of the New York School, like Gottlieb and Motherwell and a few others. But what I mean is that not that I did not see other artists, but I did not get involved in theoretical discussions as I had been previously.
Did that desire to be independent have anything to do with your leaving Paris?
Well, maybe, yes. I think that in Paris, the artists are closer to one another, and they have that habit of meeting in the evening when everybody has finished work, you know, in one cafe or a restaurant like the Coupole, and then rediscussing as if you are rediscussing, you know, the war after it has been fought already. And I really didn't feel that I needed any of that anymore.
When you left Paris, did it change the kinds of colors you used in your paintings? Being exposed to a different geography?
No, I would say, well, of course, first of all, you know, as I tell you, I lived in London. I had a studio in Chelsea, and I like England a lot. I used to go to England when I was a child, and England for me is a good source of inspiration. I also went to Greece and worked, and I didn't really work in Greece. I just took notes and did a lot of canvases about Greece when I was either in England or in Paris. What I mean is simply that Paris for me is a marvelous city. I was born there. I was brought up there. I always like to go there. But maybe I am a citizen of the world. I like to be somewhere else as well.
Your first painting show was in 1943 during the German occupation of France. Were the Nazis basically acting as curators during that period? Did you have to pass any kind of German editorial control before you were allowed to have a show?
Yes, that was not only my case. It was the same thing for any other painter. You couldn't have an exhibition in Paris at that time without a kind of commission of German officers or intellectuals who came to visit the show before the day of the opening. And then if they said, yes, it can be open, then it was open. Otherwise, all the paintings would be put down on the floor and you could not exhibit. So that's the reason why, even though I wanted to make a statement, you know, about my feelings of the time, I did it in a symbolic manner.
And the symbolism went right past the Germans who were reviewing your paintings?
That's right, in the same way as many writers, for example, like Jean-Paul Sartre, play The Flies, you know, which was supposedly inspired by ancient Greece, and many others like Jean Anouilh did Antigone, etc. So by taking oblique ways, we could also make strong commentaries on the present time. But we couldn't do it without being a little bit oblique. But the French people quite understood what we were saying.
Did you ever go through a period during the war of thinking that painting was a kind of trivial pursuit during such a time?
No, I was very young. As you know, I was 21 in 43 when I had my first exhibition. And I had decided that I wanted to fight for French culture, or for, let's say, the values, to uphold the values of what I consider to be civilization against what I consider not to be civilization.
It was during...
And a totalitarian ideology which I strongly opposed. There are many ways to oppose something. You know, you can oppose it fighting. I thought that was not the strongest point I could make, so I wanted to fight with my own tools.
It was during that first show that you met Pablo Picasso and started your relationship together. Now, you were 21 and he was 62, and you were a beginning painter. He was a world-famous painter. Were there a lot of obstacles in proving your seriousness in painting to him and to his friends, since they were already so well established?
Well, you know, since it was during that period of the Nazi occupation, things were absolutely different. They were not tall as it came. It became after the liberation. At that time, there were very few people seeing very few people, and the people were in opposition to the Germans were not that many. You know, after that, everybody was in agreement with Picasso. At that time, I can tell you, he didn't have that many friends. So I was among the people who befriended him at a time when it was difficult to do so.
Picasso told you to study Cubism, did you?
Yes, I did, but I didn't need his advice for that because I knew about it already.
What were the ideas of Cubism that interested you as a painter?
Well, a new vision of space devoid of perspective.
Was it hard to paint when you were living with him, knowing that he'd be looking at your paintings? I mean, I could see two sides of this, you know, living with someone who's already
well-established and brilliant at what he does. Yeah, but what you forget is that in France at that time, I was considered a prodigy myself. So, in fact, I didn't have any type of inferiority feeling at all. He was extremely well-known, but he was 40 years my senior, and I was one of the young painters who were most known in my own generation. So, you know, I mean, I don't think that those things are seen by people from an external point of view. I could see it from my own point of view, which was that I had confidence in myself, and his career had nothing to do with mine. It was already done, and mine lied in the future. So it didn't. If I had felt ill at ease, I would not have gone that way. I felt perfectly at ease with Pablo, and he made me also feel perfectly at ease. Otherwise, there would have been no point in a relationship like that.
Yeah, I guess I'm always interested in what happens when...
You know, I mean, it's very funny because people always imagine that when people who are sometimes very famous are really, I mean, they are already bored with that. And what they want is to live and to meet people who have their own ideals, and not people who are stupid admirers and sycophants. So he was interested in me because I was an independent person and I have my own ideas and my own way to paint, etc. That was interesting to him. If I had been just one more sycophant, he would not have been interested in me even 5 minutes.
I should say here, though, that you quote him in your book about the period of life you spent with him, life with Picasso. You quote him as saying that women are either goddesses or doormats.
Yeah, but that's what he meant, because I was a goddess, not a doormat.
But sometimes, I don't know, sometimes it seems that some men who really like goddesses want to fall in love with a goddess and then turn them into their doormat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there's also a perversity that is true. And I think Picasso was very perverse as well. But I don't think I let him go that route with me, and that's why finally I left. I always told him that he shouldn't try certain games with me because it wouldn't work out. So that's all I can say.
Painter Françoise Gillot is my guest, and she's written a new book with reproductions of many of her paintings. It's called An Artist's Journey. You, through Picasso, met Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas, and you described your first meeting with them as the equivalent of taking oral exams. Did they interrogate you? Or what was that like?
Yeah, it lasted the whole afternoon, you know, and they asked me all kinds of questions to see, you know, the extent of my culture, both literary and art history-wise, which was, I thought, a little bit absurd, but I answered their questions because I thought it was rather funny in a way.
You know, it's been years since I read Gertrude Stein's The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, but one of the things I really remember from it was that at all the dinners that they gave, that the men who were, for the most part, the artists, and Gertrude Stein would kind of be in one part of the room or sit at one table, and then the wives and Alice B. Toklas would hang out, you know, in another part of the room. Is that, now, The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas is set a few decades before you met Stein and Toklas.
Yeah, that was mostly before the First World War, when I was not yet born.
But was it that way when you used to go to their house?
No, you see, I went to their house once.
Oh, just once?
And and Alice B. Toklas took a strong dislike for me right away. But Gertrude Stein, the opposite. And after that, each time I tried to visit them at the house, then Alice Toklas said Gertrude was not there. And then Gertrude started to, with her dog Basket, meet me at Rue de Bussy 11 o'clock each morning. I would talk with her for an hour, almost until her death. So I got to know her pretty well, and we were talking about literature and painting together alone, without Pablo and without Alice. So I never went there again in their house. So I don't know how she received other people. Don't forget, she died in 46. She was already quite ill, and I think it was a pleasure for her to speak with a young person who was interested in both in literature and painting.
Do you have any ideas about why Alice B. Toklas didn't take to you at all?
No, she was jealous of me.
Oh. You know Simone de Beauvoir as well. Did you have talks with her about the kinds of issues that she later wrote about in The Second Sex?
No, I didn't really like Simone de Beauvoir at all, so I didn't talk much with her.
Oh, how come?
No, well, you know, you have your likes and dislikes. I didn't like Simone de Beauvoir as a person. I liked her as a writer, but not as a person. Sartre was very, very pleasant and very open, but Simone de Beauvoir was rather... apropos of being difficult with women, even though she professed to be a staunch feminist, she was impossible with other women.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, as you say.
Now, for the period of time when you lived with Picasso, you weren't married, right?
Yes, that's right.
Was that...
I thought it even was better that way, because that way I was independent. Otherwise, if I had been married to him, then he could have treated me any way he wanted, whereas being free, I could make my point of being still independent even though I was there, and that it was up to me to still be there or not there if I wanted.
That's a point I can really appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the real point that made my... was possible for me to have my own independence, freedom, and dignity.
But this is a concept that's much more accepted now than it was in the 1940s you met.
I don't care. I was ahead of my time for many things, not only for painting.
So you must have been really pretty, I was going to say brave, but I guess it didn't take that much courage because you didn't care about that kind of opinion of you.
No, I didn't care about people's opinion, and I still don't. I do what I think is the right thing to do in my own way, and then I do it. And if people are against what I do, that's their problem, not mine, so to speak.
Well, I want to talk with you more about your life and your work, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is Françoise Gillot. Her new book is titled An Artist's Journey. We'll be back in a couple of seconds. This is Fresh Air. Françoise Gillot is my guest. Her new book, An Artist's Journey, features many reproductions of her paintings. Her previous book is titled Life with Picasso. when just a couple of other things I wanted to ask you about, you know, the earlier part of your life. I know when you were with Picasso and when you were starting to get dissatisfied and restless, he told you that what you need is a baby and that it's good for a woman's nature. It settles her down. It puts her more in touch with nature. You had a baby, and then he complained that his life was getting too domestic. Did that drive you crazy, that he had been the one really suggesting having children, and then he would say that it was tying him down?
Yes, well, in a way, both assertions were true. You know, if you are objective about it, that is a kind of black humor I could take, because I can also myself see things in more than one way. Life is multifaceted. At the time, I was a bit bitter because I'm pleased I have my children now, but at that time, I didn't really want to have children, especially given the circumstances. And I also knew he was doing that to tie me down, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I still thought that maybe in him, you know, love and tenderness would come to dominate the other parts of himself. But I wanted to give him everything he possibly could want, because I loved him very much. So I thought, if I fail because I've not been giving enough, that would really be very sad. If I fail because I've gave all, I will have no regrets.
How much did you sacrifice your own painting to put time into his life?
I didn't have to sacrifice my own paintings. Mm-hmm. I was working as much as he did. What I had to sacrifice was my time of sleep or any or my own emotions many times. But I managed to work to take care of the children. And, you know, after all, he was very affluent. We had servants too.
Mm-hmm. When you decided to leave the relationship, he told you that people will never be interested in you just for yourself. And when they're interested in you, it will only be a kind of curiosity that they will have about a person whose life has touched Picasso's life so intimately.
Yeah, that I put in the book because I found it interesting from the point of view of his own psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, he forgot completely that I was 40 years younger, that I was a very beautiful woman as well as intelligent and gifted, and that all the people of my own generation were waiting for me to come back to them. So that it's the opposite that was true. As soon as I left him, my real life started, you see. So I put that in the book, you know, without explaining why. Because I didn't want that book to be a panegyric on me, so I just put his view of the thing without saying what I thought of it. You see, because he said this will be the end of your life, when in fact was the beginning of my life.
You said the people of your generation.
Don't forget, I called this book "Life with Picasso," not "My Life," because it was just "Life with Picasso," meaning life in general. The other people around him, which mm-hmm. I don't talk much about myself in that book, you see. In fact, it's not my biography at all. It's a part of his biography. My biography starts rather afterwards.
You said the people of your generation were waiting for you to return
right.
to them.
That's right.
Now, you were 21 and he was 62 when you met.
No, but when I left him, I was 31 and was still very young. And then I got married a year later to a painter of my own generation, Luc Simon, who has a lot of talent. He's not known in the United States, but he's quite well known in Europe. And all my other friends, whom I had not seen during the Picasso period, because I thought that it would spoil everything. So what I did during the Picasso period is to see his friends and not involve my friends in anything linked with him. Because I had a feeling it would not last forever, you see, that he was such a paradoxical person, etc., that I thought I could uphold certain things because I'm very strong, but I didn't want to involve people of my own generation who perhaps were not quite mature enough.
You're in your 60s now.
Yes.
Being at your age, close to the age that he was when you started your relationship, can you imagine, does it seem like, does the gap in the ages that you were take on a different perspective now that you're older?
What do you mean by that? Do you mean that at my age, I would like to have a young man in my life like that? I don't think I would.
No, I guess I'm asking, does it seem like a bigger gap now that you're older, than it seemed like when you were younger?
Well, I don't know. I don't think about it that much. I cannot say.
Okay. My guest is Françoise Gillot, who's written a new book about her painting, and the book includes many reproductions of her paintings. It's called An Artist's Journey. Now, you said your life began after you left.
Because you see, before Picasso, I was living with my family, and my father was a very domineering person as well, even though he was also highly gifted and very intelligent. And it was very difficult for me to assert myself. And then after that, with Pablo, it was a bit of the same problem. So I can really say that even though I learned a lot from both of them, I really started my own personal life after I left Pablo.
As far as future relationships, did you have almost a set of guidelines of what you would and would not be willing to sacrifice the next time you got involved with someone?
No, I am not a person like that. I am very spontaneous, and I think life has to be lived as for the first time every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you must not, you know, keep a part of yourself aloof. Otherwise, you are like a statue, not like a person, in your human behavior. I think it's good to be generous in life. Life is generous with you if you are generous with life.
I know that during part of your life, you've been an insomniac and have had great difficulty sleeping at night. Is that still the case?
Yes, but it's an advantage because that's how I succeeded in doing so much in my life, you see.
Working at night?
Yeah.
But aren't you tired during the day?
No, during the day I work.
So really, how many hours of sleep do you get?
Oh, well, you know, if I want to sleep more, I can, but if I have two, I can sleep 4 or 5 hours and be very pleased.
It seems to me, you know, as you said earlier, that you got indigestion from being with so many artists and then you wanted to be on your own. It seems to me you've really, in a way, divorced yourself from different schools of art. Your work has gone through different periods, but it hasn't been in sync with the schools of the day.
No, you see, I had, that's what I really learned in that first phase. Never again belong to a group. That's what I said in this book, I think. Because in a group, some people are always the leaders and they always want the others to conform. And I'm a non-conformist. I want to conform only to my own self and the deep desires that motivate me as an artist. And I couldn't care less about whether the others are going that route or not. Ultimately, if I have lived my life as an artist right, my work, which I call the artist's journey, which is a kind of pilgrimage, you know, toward my own center, my own being, is that's what the only thing that is important. And after all, I have enough following as it is, so I think I did the right thing.
Do you have people who prodigies who you've taken under your wing to teach what you know too much in the same way that other more established people taught you a lot when you were coming of age?
Well, I thought of that, and for about 7 years I gave courses at USC summer campus in Idlewild. USC is University of Southern California. And I gave a course that was lasting about a month and was like a semester, but I would have my students with me all day long, sharing my life, you see. And I did that for about 7 years. I thought that was enough. So it's done. I was pleased to have young people with me, but I was mostly trying to help them develop their own capacities and not teaching them my way of thinking or my way of seeing. I don't believe in that.
You're married to Jonas Salk now, and he's a scientist, you're an artist. To a lot of people, the worlds of science and art are very, very far apart, but others say that they're really very close and that scientists like artists really operate on intuition and on hunches. What do you think?
Well, I think that a creative scientist is very much like a creative artist. The field is different, but the way of thinking and the creative process is basically the same.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your life and your work. I should ask you, do you have any shows coming up that we should know about?
I have the retrospective that was at the Picasso Museum in Antibes in September. We'll go now to the museum at Hofstra University in Hempstead starting on April the 24th. And then it will tour several places, several museums in the United States for 2 years after that.
Françoise Gillot has written a new book about her painting, titled An Artist's Journey. The book includes many reproductions of her work. It's published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.